Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, we are back just in time for the assembly to adjourn. Plus, Robin Voss announces he won't seek re-election, ending the longest speakership in Wisconsin history. And Governor Tony Evers delivers his final State of the State address. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for February 20th.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
It is great to be across the desk from you again, JR. We are back and just in time because this has been a pretty crazy week. Actually, as of this taping, the assembly has still not adjourned. They are in recess. And so we ran across the street to try to tape this. And so let's get straight into it. Start of the week was State of the State. It is the final one for Governor Tony Evers. And we'll start with a little bit of video of his back and forth with Devin Lemieux.
Folks, I know many of you are up for the election, but here's the deal. After years of delivering historic bipartisan wins for our state, Wisconsinites have high expectations for the work we can do together over the next 10 months, and they should. Just look at what we've accomplished over the last 7 years. My 400-year veto isn't an automatic property tax increase, folks, because that isn't how school funding works in Wisconsin. The legislature has rejected over $7 billion for K-12 schools that I requested over the last four state budgets. If lawmakers want to have an honest conversation about property taxes, start there. I always promise to be a governor who works for all Wisconsinites and who does the right thing when it matters most. I'll never stop working to make good on the promise as long as I'm governor. We have lots of work to do, folks. So let's get back to it. Thank you. And on, Wisconsin, UW Marching Band, let her rip.
Tonight, Wisconsin stands at a crossroads. As families across the state feel the impact of rising costs, the state government has a $2.5 billion surplus. Speaker Voss and I sent a proposal to Governor Evers to return a portion of the surplus to taxpayers through a $1,000 rebate check. Our plan would use the remaining surplus to strengthen our commitment to special education above what we promised in the budget and dedicate $500 million to limit the property tax impact of the governor's 400-year veto. We can make our state stronger by lowering property taxes, supporting schools, and returning the surplus to the people who created it, you, the taxpayers. The legislature is ready. It's up to Governor Evers to make this compromise a reality. God bless you, and may God continue to bless the great state of Wisconsin.
All right, so lots there, especially around school funding and property taxes, which is really kind of one of the last things that's maybe getting hammered out, and we'll come back to that towards the end of the show to talk about kind of where things stand there. But there were also some new things that came up in his speech. He talked about a new partnership with UW. He tried really hard to kind of push lawmakers into sticking around and working a little bit more. As I mentioned, the assembly is trying to adjourn today. I don't know that Republicans want to stick around in order to enact a bunch of a Democratic governor's priorities. He did say that he is going to order a special session to work on partisan gerrymandering. What do you think are the odds of something like that coming through?
Slim to none, or closer to none. Like the governor is... He is not known for giving a stem winder, as I call it in politics. He is not the most passionate speaker in public, and even his backers will tell you that's not his strong point. He comes across as somebody who earnestly likes Wisconsin and wants the best for the state, but in terms of somebody who is effective in like bending the legislature to his will, that is not what Governor Evers does. And you saw it again Tuesday night in the speech where he was like, do this, do this, do this. That's not how you get something done in a split legislature or a split control of the Capitol. It is more, okay, I can give you this if you can give me that. That's not his strong point. What we're seeing, though, from this speech is, one, the Evers goodbye. It was 6,400 words, by my count, about 600 more is his record, previous record, more than an hour. People already could have cut it down a bit, would have been more efficient. But besides that, Evers is threatening to basically call special sessions over and over and over again. So even though he's kind of like a lame duck out the door, he could be, and I stress could be, effective in pressuring Republicans on things they'll be pressured about. Okay, gun control. Look at the Marquette poll, be a new one out next week. It's popular. Republicans don't want to do it. You can see a special session in August on gun control, on this popular health care provision. Pick your poison for Republicans electorally. You can see Evers calling those. Now, we know what happens when these things do, right? Leadership comes in, two members, they gavel in the session and gavel out. Flock of reporters in the chamber, videotape it, post it on social media, flurry of press releases, and they all go home. So for most members, that's not a big deal. But for the ones who are vulnerable, they might get stories in local paper, local radio, local TV of, hey, the governor wants you this, why aren't you doing these things? So we'll see how it plays out if he holds true to this threat, but that might be Evers' parting gift, the legislature of, okay, you guys want to do what I want you to do, I'm going to make you uncomfortable for not doing it before I leave office.
Right, there is a kind of that big question of what kind of power does he have in the next 11 months, given that they know that obviously he's not seeking another term, but they don't know which Democrat is going to kind of rise ahead in the primary. And so with all those kind of open questions, we're seeing a lot of jostling around messaging for November starting really early. What do you think about odds for things like, for some of the other things that he's announced that are a little bit more, you know, executive order related, some of the things, some of his new initiatives, what does that tell you?
Well, interesting. So he's talking about buying more renewable energy credits as a state and trying to get us more toward carbon neutrality. That would kick in 2031. Now, I'm pretty decent at math for a journalist, but his term ends in 2027. So you're talking about the next governor's like full first term before we actually see that kick in. I don't know how that works because I haven't seen such a proposal if they can bind the next governor to this. But hey, that's out there. Some of the things, you know, yeah, he can do them. This partnership with UW, okay, he can do that. But beyond that, I'm not sure there's lasting power for most things he talked about, nor do I see Republicans all of a sudden saying, yes, we're going to embrace your call for blank just because you told us to.
And of course, one of the big kind of calls that he made in his speech was rejecting a Republican offer on property taxes, school funding. And he did it really kind of sort of out of hand in the middle of the speech. And again, we will circle back to that. At the time, that felt like kind of the big news of the week was that negotiation. But speaking of legislators who do kind of bend things to their will, Robin Voss, the really significant news of the week is that he announced that he is retiring after serving as the longest standing speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly. He announced it on the floor on Thursday ahead of session, and we have a little bit of video of what was kind of an emotional speech from him.
Winston Churchill famously said, "Everyone has his day, and some days last longer than others." My time has lasted quite a while, but my service in this chamber will end when the new class of freshmen are sworn in. I've been so honored to serve with all of you in this chamber, and I will miss many of you, but not all of you. But to those of you who I will miss, and actually all of you, I appreciate your service. As I step away from this chamber, my hope is super simple, that those who follow will remember that the legislature is not meant to be convenient or fast or easy. It is meant to be deliberative, it's meant to be independent, and it's meant to be strong. If this institution remains strong, Wisconsin will remain strong. So as my friend, the former Speaker of Iowa, Linda Upmeyer, said on her own retirement, "I'll miss the clowns, but not the circus." And I thought about that, and it's certainly fitting. Thank you all for your service. Thank you for the honor you've given me. May God bless Wisconsin, and let's end with a great session day, hopefully in the reasonable hours of the night. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so we, I think, knew that he was going to make this announcement. We didn't necessarily know when. I know that we talked about potentially it happening in my newsroom on Thursday, but when he started talking about walking into the assembly several decades ago, that was when I swore and ran to make sure that I kind of caught this moment. I've been covering the legislature or the Capitol for 3 years, and I often talk about Robin Voss when I'm telling people about my job because he's just so influential on Wisconsin politics, but I'm sort of much more interested about your take on who he is as speaker, what his tenure has been like, because you've been covering him, I think, since the beginning.
Yeah, he got here in 2004, was his election. Now, he was a student regent back in Tommy Thompson's days. That predated me by a little bit. But look, if you take the whole of his career, probably the most effective leader, one of them that I've seen in the Capitol, whether it was at 54 members or 64, the Assembly GOP caucus always seemed to be rowing the same direction. Now, it wasn't always pretty, and it wasn't just Robin. He had a leadership team around him that helped him get to these places. But look at that compared to the state Senate, where it's a constant battle. They seem fractured all the time. Robin has detractors in the caucus, but they seem to get things done when they need to. Now, if you talk to people about Robin Voss, he creates very strong impressions. On the one hand, effective leader, the middle of all these big Republican reforms, changes, Act 10, part of the right to work effort. That really Scott Fitzgerald, the majority in the Senate, kind of got rolling, but then Robin was a key part of all these things, the maps rigged in Republicans' words, Democrats' words, he's part of that. Smartest guy in the room a lot of times, and knew it, people will tell you. And at times, because when you are that person, you have patience for others. He called the governor feckless and effective. He told Democrats in the Assembly, you don't matter, you're irrelevant. He called Republicans in the Senate terrorists, quote unquote, in 2017, because three of them held up the budget until they got promises from Scott Walker to veto certain things. He backed off that later on, but really a guy who was great at strategy and did his job. Democrats will complain about those maps a lot, and they have reason to. They were drawn for Republican advantage for sure. But those maps don't explain the majorities that he had, because if you look at 2024 with maps that Evers drew, Republicans accepted, there were five Republicans who won seats that Donald Trump lost. That tells you that it's not just maps, it's money, it's message, it's candidate quality. And he found those things in spades through his entire career. Now, once he leaves, how's that going to look? Good question, but I mean, much different body than what it was Robin Voss there. And, you know, definitely somebody who was going to leave an impression. Now, the question you always have is, Tom Loftus left an impression for 8 years. He's not somebody talked about in the Capitol. Like, that's the thing about the Capitol. It's always churning. And except for certain figures, you know, what's the memory of them? Like Tommy Thompson? I mean, he's a larger-than-life figure, right? He always keeps coming back. Scott Walker, one of the most consequential governors in Wisconsin history. Where will Robin Voss fit in that memory of politics 20 years from now? But for right now, definitely one of the most influential people I've seen in the last two decades in the Capitol.
Well, and a couple big questions are kind of raised. One is, you know, Democrats really, I think, mostly raced to express their longtime displeasure with him. He obviously made a lot of, I wouldn't say enemies, but he wasn't particularly well-liked by Democrats. The Democratic Party of Wisconsin sent out a really scathing response. Governor Evers, however, and David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive, both sent out pretty magnanimous statements because of the kind of bipartisan work there. But, you know, one of the claims that I think Democrats are trying to make is this is a signifier that we are going to, you know, kind of sweep in November, and he's running scared, right? He doesn't want to lose his influence. I don't feel like this is something that we can kind of read those tea leaves into, but it does kind of beg the question of what is coming down the line for Republicans and who can fill his shoes. Even if Republicans don't lose the Assembly, they're sure to face a slimmer majority.
So Robin told me that he's going to be around this fall, still involved with RAC, the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, fundraising, doing strategy, recruiting candidates. So he wants to go out on a high note, in his words, and hold the majority. If you look at the maps and the seats in play and the environment, environment's not great for Republicans right now, let's be honest. I mean, if we are in November with Donald Trump in the 30s and people on the left inflamed because of what ICE is doing in Pick Your City, that's not a great combination for Republicans. If the temperature dials down a bit with ICE, if the economy is picking up, not just for the top, but for those at the bottom and the middle, maybe a different situation. But if you look at the Assembly map, Democrats have to basically run the table in all the contested races unless they expand the map beyond those, your Ben Franklin and the Green Bay area kind of seats. We'll see. We'll see what's going down the pipe. We'll talk more about the future leadership of the Assembly later on, but Robin's not going away just yet, and it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of help them hold the majority come November, these headwinds blowing right now.
There was a really interesting example of the influence and power that he has this week with two bills that went through, and they went through finally after many years of failing because he finally kind of took his foot off the brake and allowed them to move forward. So this tells you about the power that he has. One was about expanding postpartum Medicaid up from 60 days for low-income women immediately after giving birth, but up to a year. We are becoming the 49th state to have this, and so this was a very popular, bipartisanly supported bill that he was kind of the sole opposition to getting it to the floor. And then another one that would waive out-of-pocket costs for certain supplemental breast cancer screenings for people with advanced risk. And he had also held that one up. And then we had this, again, it's been a long week in the Assembly. We had this late-night press conference on Wednesday night, I want to say it was, where eight Republicans, and speaking of, you know, electoral possibilities, eight very vulnerable Republicans got up and said, we have convinced Speaker Voss after 6 hours in closed caucus to allow these to go forward. They hit the floor yesterday, and they were almost unanimously and unanimously passed, with Voss voting for both of them. But that was after holding them up for many years. So before we talk about what all that tells us, let's just get a sense of the vibe of what it meant for these to get to the floor with a little bit of video.
I'm the author of the postpartum bill that I started way back in February of 25, working with the speaker, working with my caucus to get this passed, because it's the right thing to do. So we're going to pass it. I've heard the stories. I know the different dynamics to who's affected 5 to 9 months. My wife, my daughter, I saw that. I understood it. And it's something that's very important. And it's very passionate to me. And this bull that they threw today to try to, I don't know what they were trying to do, but lobbyists told them to wait at least till Thursday. And they didn't. So politics interfered with what's right for the women of Wisconsin. And in my 10 years, I'm so sick of this. Politics getting in the way of everything. So I'm so glad that these bills will be out tomorrow. And it needs to be done.
Today, Democrats effectively stopped business in the state assembly in order to force votes on these bills. Republicans appear to have finally acquiesced, and that would be an incredible win for the people of Wisconsin. We demand to see the language and a clean bill on postpartum Medicaid expansion and Gail's Law. We hope that that is going to be coming to the floor of the Assembly tomorrow so that these bills can be passed into law. It is what the people of Wisconsin need and deserve. It is our job as the minority party to raise issues that are important to people of this state and make sure that we get votes on those issues. Raising amendments and Republicans refusing to vote on them is their own choice. We have a responsibility to our constituents and the women of this state whose lives depend on these policies being passed. And so we were going to stop at nothing to get a vote on these bills. We hope that that's what's going to happen tomorrow.
So the bull that Snyder is referring to is the fact that Democrats also spent that day attaching these bills as amendments to every single other bill that was coming up to the floor for a vote. And so he was calling that a political stunt. Democrats were saying that's essentially what got this over the finish line. But how do you think this got over the finish line? These have been, you know, proposals since, I think, 2019.
Yeah. So there are three things you'll mention to me. One, Robin Voss is retiring. So, you know, does he need to hold them up anymore? Is it worth the fight anymore? Number two, Pat Schneider, for example, had made it clear to members of the caucus, if we can't do this bill, why am I here? His district is not really a top target. It's like just outside those top 4 or 5 seats. But if you're a Democrat and you expand the map, you go to Pat Schneider's seat. If that seat has an incumbent in it, much tougher than one that's open, right? So there was some effort to placate Pat. These Democratic tactics, Pat rebuffed him, so they actually made it worse. Well, look, it's not a coincidence, people told me, that the 8 members at the news conference are all targets this fall or possible targets this fall. For most Republicans in the Assembly and Senate caucuses, no. It's not going to matter to them if they like have all these amendments and bills don't pass. They're in safe seats. For these, though, you're talking mail, radio, TV, banging the drum of health care. Women are a pretty decent constituency in a swing election. There are some uncomfortable moments possible even if it passes a bill. So you add it all up, you get this breakthrough. It's interesting listening to Republicans that news conference made it sound like it took them hours to whip their members to get it behind these bills. They passed overwhelmingly. The reality is that Robin Voss was the big impediment. Others weren't thrilled, I'm sure, in the caucus, but push come to shove, they almost all got behind it. And now they have this issue off the table for the most part in November.
And when they passed, there was a lot of applause on the floor, which is not typically allowed. And so that was kind of a positive moment on the floor. We've also seen a lot of, especially today, tempers flaring. There's still quite a bit to address. We are awaiting the big ones for today, which may be taking place right now, even as we speak, about addressing SNAP and addressing PFAS. So what's going on there?
So SNAP, one, there's a bill that's on the calendar that would ban you, or seek a waiver, require the administrator to seek a waiver to ban the purchase of soda and candy with SNAP. It's kind of like a big push nationally under the MAHA movement, if I got that correct. Now, with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act back this summer, it made a number of changes to the SNAP program. One of them is it changed the share of administrative costs. It was 50-50 between the feds and the state. Now the feds do 25%. And number two, there's now a cap of an error rate. So the error rate is people on the program who shouldn't be there, who aren't eligible. That cap is now 6%. The last check we got was 4.5%, which is below that, obviously. But it's been, that was in like 2024, been some time. There is a real fear that if we don't have enough people checking eligibility, that we'll get above that cap, and then we will lose money, big money. If you get to 10% in Wisconsin, it's $200 million that you lose. So there's been talk since December of marrying the request from the Department of Health Services of additional administrative costs for that 25-75 deal, or the 50-50, and two, positions at DHS to do those checks. Now, the devil's in the details. Republicans would prefer to use existing vacant positions, because there's, in government, there's authority for positions. They're not filled, but they're there in the books. Okay, just grab those positions and you fill those to do these checks. The administration wants, Evers folks want to have like new positions, so there's some details to be hashed out about that. But they would marry those things together and get that done. There's a second bill now that would also address SNAP that would require the Evers folks to turn over the SNAP roles to the Department of Agriculture. That's not part of this deal. They're keeping that separate because Democrats will not go for that whatsoever. Two, PFAS. We have been talking about PFAS and addressing them for years in Wisconsin. There was money put aside in the 23 budget, $125 million. They have not agreed yet on how to do that. They think they have the framework of a deal on innocent landowners. That's what they're called. Basically, they didn't pollute the land. They didn't know it was polluted, but they don't want to be charged. They want to protect them some from the cleanup costs. How do you make sure that they're truly innocent and not somebody who maybe did something they shouldn't have done? They think they have, or they thought, last time I checked, had an agreement on that language. When lawyers get involved, things get complicated. So they got to write the language for the statute to match the deal they think they have or thought they had. So that's what's holding us up right now, is getting those things done. Like, again, some big deals, the PFAS stuff. There are people up in the Green Bay area, for example, who really want to get this done. It's one of the places that you've got some contamination. So that kind of has to get through. They've been waiting for a couple of years. And the SNAP stuff, look, everybody wants to make sure we don't lose federal money. It's already getting tighter because of One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The soda and candy thing, that's kind of a priority for some Republicans. The Democrats probably won't vote for the bill because of that, but the governor would then sign it, and we go, okay, can we decide for the relief about losing bigger pots of money later down the road?
So we are waiting on that. The other kind of big open question was going to be, will there be a deal on property taxes and school funding? And again, that's kind of how we started the show. But in the middle of the week, Tyler August said that one of the kind of holdups for the assembly session was these negotiations. So just to kind of catch people up in very broad strokes, because obviously this is taking place over the last two, 3 weeks. First, it comes out that the governor and Speaker Voss are negotiating, and they're trying to trade, again, some amount of tax relief, some amount of school funding. Devin Lemieux, who says, I am not involved in those conversations. And then the Senate Republicans come out with their own proposal for tax rebates. And so then Republicans kind of get on board with that, and now Evers is kind of shut out of that. And as we mentioned in his State of the State address, he said, I am not interested in the package that you've put forward. So what is happening right now? What happens if the assembly adjourns without any kind of funding plan for property taxes, schools?
Well, we have special sessions and extraordinary sessions. So if they want to, they can come back. That's not a problem. The question is, do they get a deal to come back? So the kind of battle lines are drawn. Evers wants money for education, especially special education. So special education, it's a reimbursement program. You spend the money, then apply for reimbursement. They give you an estimate of, we're going to cover this much of your cost, because it's not a, some sufficient program. I try to be a dork with people at home, but some sufficient means whatever you need, you get, right? There's no cap. Some certain means you get X million dollars or billion dollars, and if it's not enough, we're going to prorate the amount of money. When they signed the budget, they had prorated, expected to be 42% the first year, 45% the second for your cost. Well, the cost for last year came in higher than they thought they were going to be, so they're actually lower than 42% the first year. The $200 million will get it back up to what they think they would get to be at those marks for the next 2 years. So everybody kind of likes that idea. The governor wants that. He also wants money for equalization aids. That's the biggest pot of money going to schools. It also plays in the four-year veto. That four-year veto raised the cap on spending per year between general aids and property taxes. The more general aid you have, less property taxes you raise. Because this current budget put no money in equalization aids, property taxes went up to cover that entire increase. The governor wants that. Some Republicans are like, no way, we're not going to do that because of a couple of reasons. One, that program benefits schools the most based on property values. The poorer you are, the more you get. Republicans don't represent those areas. They don't like that program. They prefer other aids. Number two, they feel like the veto problem is Evers' problem, Democrats' problem. Why let him off the hook for this 400-year veto? Because they feel like they have him on the ropes with that. Some Republicans want property tax relief. One idea they have is a school levy credit. Now that goes into is basically a credit on the school tax, property tax levies, and drives down everybody's bill. One issue with that, though, is it applies to everybody. So if you're from Illinois and you have a place up north, you get that break as well. The rebate that some Republicans want is expensive, $1.5 billion. Easy to do, just check for everybody. The problem is if you add up the entire latest GOP proposal, it's $2.3 billion. Our surplus is projected $2.5 billion. Projected, not counting a shortfall in Medicaid of $200 million that were, it could happen, it might not, or we might not get money from the feds for this hospital assessment deal that we did in this current budget. So we're not sure we're actually there all the way to get what they're talking about when it comes to the surplus. So I would not expect to be $2.3 billion in the end, but can they each get a piece of what they want, make everybody happy, and come back probably in March and do it? That's the drama that we're waiting for.
And again, messaging for November. I mean, people are really aware of how high their property taxes are right now. All right, stock report rising, of course, is Robin Voss.
So let's talk more about like the future, like who might fill his role. Tyler August is the obvious answer. He's the Senate Majority Leader number two position in that caucus. He got elected Majority Leader in 2022 after those elections, being the 23 session. He's been leader and waiting the entire time. If you watch their news conferences, Tyler's taking on more and more responsibility, and Robin stepped back a little bit, partly because he's been doing other things, not in the Capitol, so Tyler's filled that role. There'll probably be a push from somebody from a different wing of the caucus to maybe challenge Tyler, or at least make some calls. As long as Republicans have an okay fall, hard to get oxygen for that. Now, if things fall apart in November, maybe it opens the door. But for right now, it looks like Tyler is kind of the guy who's going to be next to lead that caucus, again, barring something crazy happening.
Next is Sylvia Ortiz-Velez.
So remember, this whole drama in the fall about her, she left the caucus. Her colleagues accused her of threatening to shoot them. She said she was barred from the Capitol. Whole kinds of drama. Now she has a primary challenger. Guy announced this week. Not real well known in politics, but it's an issue now for her because if you get a challenge as an incumbent, usually you have the caucus or the party to back you up. She's not a member of the caucus, and they're not going to help her. So if you look at her district, it's really interesting. It's the lowest turnout district in the state. I went back and looked at the primary in 2024. She had a challenge. A guy who had some legal problems was on work release, I think, for second OWI when he was running against her. So not a great combination sometimes to challenge an incumbent. But anyway, there were less than 1,800 votes cast in that primary. It tells me that if you are, even if you're kind of flying solo, if you have a well-oiled machine that knows which houses to target, like you can pull it off on your own. If you have the data, who has the data? The political party and the caucus. You're not part of that right now. So how is she going to find that help? That's going to be a challenge for her to watch. And by the way, it's not just because she had this whole issue with the caucus. She's broken them on a number of high-profile things and has been at odds with the caucus. That could be a problem for you as well. My question now becomes, is there going to be some group, somebody's going to spend money to help either her or the opponent in a district that's that low turnout, it can make a big difference.
Right, and what is the cost for legislative Democrats to kind of remove a thorn from their side? Mm-hmm. Falling is stewardship, something that we thought might see a deal reached this week as well.
Okay, so here's the dynamic, all right? This program has been around since 1989-90, that session, and a big part of it acquiring property protected to, you know, protect it from development to ensure it can be used. Republicans in general want a pause on that. They want at least some kind of pullback from the $16 million a year we've been doing on acquisitions. The issue is they can't figure out how to get on the same page, and Democrats aren't going for what they're selling. So the Assembly passed a package last month. It went from $33.25 million currently down to $28.25 million. I know it's not a big difference financially, but there is very little money for acquisitions. Basically like $1 million for Ice Age Shell property, to smaller funds, basically to improve the quality of outdoor recreation in some okay. Pat Testin, bless his soul, people tell me, and the Senate was trying to figure a way to get this thing through. Mary Felskowski is a member from up north, the Tomahawk area. She wanted a ban on acquisitions north of US 8, runs across the entire top of the state. Also wanted a provision that said if you have land as a community in stewardship, you could pull it out, pay a penalty, pay back the cost, but get it out and develop it. Because the chafe up north is you have so much land in some districts in the program, they can't grow as a tax base. Rob Stassholt, Republican from New Richmond, says, I don't like US 8. I want to do a cap of anything. Once you get 35% of your property owned by the state, feds, or local governments, that's it. You're capped unless you have a referendum. They have the bill in the Senate. They put it on the calendar, and it didn't go anywhere. They also added back $2.5 million in acquisition money to try and get Democrats on board. They had to pull it off because here's the dynamic. Tessin told me, it's like squeezing a balloon. You try and make Rob happy, you make Mary unhappy. Try to make Mary happy, Rob unhappy, and it goes back, and other members have that same issue. And the Democrats are going to buy into it. So there's going to be a rule of 17 in the Senate that you need 70 GOP votes to pass anything. It's not enforced all the time. Devin Lemahieu, though, is not enough of an advocate of this program that if he had 14 GOP votes, he'd put on the floor and say, okay, let's get Democrats. Let's do what they need. Also, you could get Democrats on board. So now your best bet is the Assembly version of the bill. Well, there's a reason why Pat Tessin revamped that thing in his House. The Assembly version is not going to pass. So your only hope to reauthorize stewardship, which ends June 30th, is to maybe a Hail Mary to tack it on to a tax deal, a rebate deal. Somehow, like the governor says, I got to have stewardship. And for Democrats, like, look, you know, yes, the authorization expires June 30th, but we might have a trifecta after November. We can do our version in January and make it our bill. So right now, doesn't look great. So, look, if you enjoy stewardship land right now, it's not going away. It still stays in the books, but there's no more room to grow the program, add stuff to it, unless you have a standalone bill for some big project.
There's a lot of irony that this, you know, project that is named after a Republican governor and a Democratic governor is going through such a kind of partisan battle right now. We will leave it there for this week, but I am thrilled to say that we will be back next week as well. And I am Anivin Wangtendong.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
See you then.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.